Welcome along to this bite-sized edition of Tax and Lunch. Thanks for joining me. I'm Vincent Licciardi. You're listening to the podcast for tax advisors to high net worth individuals, wealthy family groups, and private clients. I'm really excited that you're joining me for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with your team so they can also gain the inside perspective. Let's listen in. The 2024 year's already off with a bang. It's been a fast start. By the time I'm recording this and you're hearing it, it's actually closer to the end of January, heading into February. What I would like to speak with you about in this session is putting your client's best foot forward for the 2024 year. These are my five hot tax areas for advisors to high net worth individuals and big family businesses, and hopefully some solutions and ideas to make it a smoother 2024. Now, these are my five ideas. There will be others who have different opinions, different takes on what the ATO has been publishing, on what government is doing, on what may be happening in different sectors and different businesses. But these are my five areas that I think are going to be hot topics in tax in 24. I'll run through them briefly, and then I'm going to go into some more detail. Number five, succession planning for clients. Number four, related party transactions. Number three, M&A business exits by clients, partial or full divestments. Number two, is your client's existing private group, that would include their company's trusts and partnerships, actually fit for purpose? Does the group achieve what the client wants it to achieve for modern time? And number one, probably what I think is slowly becoming, if it hasn't already, the number one risk for the ATO. That is getting lodgements and payments in on time, and those who haven't got them in on time, getting them up to date. And before I go into each of these ones in more detail, it'd be great to hear from you as to what your top five are, or even top three. Please reach out. I'd be happy to have a chat. So let's deal with number five. That was succession planning for clients. Now, I'm only going to go into this one on a couple points in particular. Things that I sometimes see go wrong, and what can we do to help get them right first time around. So if you're rearranging or restructuring a client's affairs, what's the actual plan to make that happen? And do you have tax advice for that? For instance, are you triggering tax when you're restructuring assets? Maybe child number one is going to take the business, child number two will take the property portfolio. Are you triggering tax, for instance, by resettling trusts? How are you dealing with super, that being superannuation, perhaps death benefits? My solution or idea when dealing with clients in the context of succession plan is really asking this question. Now, sometimes I ask this question to clients, even in the context of not doing succession planning for them, but I find it can be a really helpful tool. It's a very helpful question. Perhaps if you ask this question, and here it is. If the client could crystal ball, what would perfect look like to them? And then as the advisor, work backwards from there. So is perfect to the client that they wished everyone got along and perhaps assets were split 50-50 with two children, or perhaps assets were split a third, a third, a third? Or is it more nuanced than that? As I mentioned, child number one takes the business, they've run the business. Child number two doesn't want to work in the business anymore, and so he's going to take the assets. perhaps the property portfolio or the share portfolio. What does perfect look like to your client? And then work backwards from there. I ask that question for a simple reason. I then try and build the bridge towards the client's personal objective. Clearly, as the advisor, you'll know the rules. How do I get the client from A to B? It also means the client has the chance to know what are the pitfalls and the risks. Can we get them from A to B? Yes, we might be able to get them there, but it's going to cost them some money along the way. Perhaps in duty or in tax, we might be able to restructure it now before the business gets too big. So again, my question is very simply, what does perfect look like to the client, and work backwards from there? Number four, related party transactions. Now, I must say, as long as I've been in tax, related party transactions have been on the ATO's radar. Now, when I talk about related party transactions, I'm not just talking about, oh, well, I transferred an asset from mum and dad into the trust. Related party transactions, particularly in probably the last 5 to 10 years, have become more nuanced. And you can probably include transfer pricing and even the ATO's most recent publication on intangibles as part of that umbrella of related party transactions. It's always been a hotly contested area, and most of the time, the risks tend to rely on valuations. And I've said many times to many advisors, the restructure that you're doing or the transaction that you're doing will live and die by how robust your valuation is. Would it stand up to the ATO scrutiny? If the answer is yes, fantastic. If the answer is no, perhaps not so. And so my solution or idea in the context of related party transactions is that, and in hindsight this tends to be the case, the advisor and preferably the client shouldn't be afraid to ask for a second opinion. That might be from a different valuer, might be from a different advisor, different accountant, perhaps a barrister or a lawyer. It's okay to ask for a second opinion. I understand that that feels odd. If you're the advisor who's been tasked by the client to complete the transactions, particularly if you've put those transactions forward to the client, you've made the suggestion in the first place, and then you're saying to the client, oh, by the way, we should get a second opinion. That feels odd. But I can tell you now in hindsight, there is no harm in crossing your T's and dotting your I's. Particularly because getting it wrong, particularly for larger family businesses and wealthier clients, getting it wrong will have a disproportionate effect. You'll be paying a lot more money to the ATO than you will in getting a second opinion. Also, to getting a second opinion, sometimes we will call this a wrap, that can go a long way to convincing the ATO that there perhaps shouldn't be any penalties at all and possibly no interest. So for related party transactions, my solution or idea is that you shouldn't be afraid to ask for a second opinion. Number three, hot on the ATO's radar this year will be M&A, business exits and divestments, particularly as the market picks up again. And so you have to get it right. There also has to be a link between the advisors doing the buying or selling and the accountants reporting it to the ATO. I've seen cases where, for some reason, there seems to be this disconnect between the advisors that are selling the business and the accountant who's been the client's accountant for 20 years. That simply can't happen. And I remember, and you can have a look at this on my podcast, one of my very first interviews on this podcast was with a very senior staff member from the ATO's early engagement area. He was the chief of that area. And for those of you that don't know, the early engagement area is a division of the ATO that has around 50 staff, and all they do is scour media and articles generally for deals. It's very clear the ATO is watching, and they're watching more than simply their data matching exercises. So my solution or idea for your M&A business exits and divestments is you must structure it right to sell, and you must structure it right to buy. Now, I know that that might sound so obvious that it has to be right. But the reason why I say this to you is because it's always difficult to unscramble things if you don't get it right the first time, especially if the client has land or if there's some form of duty involved, particularly if there's sales or transactions involving goodwill, possibly in Queensland, possibly in WA. Unscrambling or restructuring a deal, or unscrambling a structure once it's complete and done, can actually cost the client more money. So whilst it seems obvious, structure the deal right, whether you're on the buy side or the sell side. Now, sometimes that will mean that what's good for the sell side might not be good for the buy side. And what's good for the buy side might not be good for the sell side. But that ought to be some of the discussion between the advisors to make certain the deal is structured accurately. I usually see shortcuts in the early days that come home to roost years later. And then what ends up happening, people are asking the question, why was it done a particular way? This structure doesn't make a lot of sense. And perhaps at times it can be that the advisor or the client took a shortcut. Number two, is the client's existing private group, now bearing in mind, my expertise is in private groups, so I'm not necessarily talking about large corporates. Is the client's existing private group fit for purpose? And let me tell you, even if you've had the group in place, the structure in place for 20, 30 or 40 years and no one's asked any questions about it, it doesn't mean the structure's right. This applies, and perhaps one of the more obvious questions I get, or one of the questions that I get regularly when I'm assisting clients under audit by the ATO, is that the client says, well, the ATO looked at that last time, so it should be right this time around. Why is the next auditor looking at it saying there's a problem? The last guy said it was fine. Then when you get into the nuts and bolts, the reality is the ATO didn't really look at the structure in detail. Or if they did, the client was lucky. Also to bear in mind, what worked at inception of a private group, what worked when the business was turning over $5 million, doesn't necessarily work when the business is turning over $500 million. And you may be dealing with a very different commercial beast 10 or 20 years later. The rules have changed, the laws have changed, structures have changed over time as different advisors have been seeking to ensure the clients can meet their commercial objectives. So ask the question, is the existing group fit for purpose? Because if you get the answer, well, we've just done it like that, and it's just been always the case, why are you questioning it now? That may be the very answer that means your client's got a problem. And I'll give you a couple really important points on this in the context of private groups, which I'm still seeing come up every time I read the ATO's publications about private groups. They're still raising 2 points nearly every single time, and it surprises me. The first one is the ATO is still catching advisors out on not complying correctly with Division 7A. And we're not necessarily talking the more difficult parts of Division 7A. Based on what the ATO is publishing, they're still catching people out on things like having a loan agreement in place, doing the minimum yearly repayment correctly. And so it's crucial to determine, is the existing group fit for purpose, and therefore are the existing rules being applied correctly? The other item that the ATO is catching clients out on, which is relevant to how your group is structured, particularly if your client uses family trusts, is family trust elections. The ATO said in its last publication that there are still distributions occurring outside the family group. And so these are the bread and butter of private client taxes. And there are ways, depending on the structure that your client has adopted, there are ways to possibly not even need to be within the requirements of Division 7A or FTEs. You may not need them at all, depending on how your group is structured. So it's crucial to revisit the group, which is my number two. My solution or idea for whether the group is fit for purpose is to do an in-house tax review. Sometimes that's called tax DD. If you're not sure how to do it, come and ask me about my audit checklist. I'm happy to send it to you. It will cover all the target areas that the ATO has been looking at over the last few years. It's also preempting some of these target areas, and so those are in there as well. I'm happy to share that with you, with your clients. If you'd like me to conduct a tax review, I'm happy to do that. I previously worked at the ATO, so I'm happy to bring that lens to your client's review. What might the ATO look at that someone on this side of the fence thinks is quite vanilla, quite plain, quite boring? I'm happy to discuss that with you. Ultimately, my checklist, all of the ATO's targets are in one place, so you have the heads up before the ATO comes knocking. I'm happy to share that with you. Don't be a stranger on that point. And number one, which I think will be probably the biggest issue that the ATO is going to target this year, particularly for private groups, is twofold. And I think, again, it seems obvious, but the ATO has been clamping down for the best part of 12 months or so, is get your lodgements, get your clients' lodgements up to date, get payments to the ATO up to date in on time. More and more, I'm actually seeing non-lodgement and non-payment of tax debt being the primary reason the ATO comes knocking in the first place, only to then start more heavy-duty audits. So please, 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 number one, my biggest issue for this year will be get your clients' lodgements and payments to the ATO in on time and up to date. That will help put the client's best foot forward. It also gives your client the opportunity to avoid an unnecessary risk. Why be on the ATO's radar for something that should become and be part of their annual compliance process? My solution or idea on this one might seem a bit weird, a bit unusual, but if the client is having difficulty, if your client's having difficulty in meeting those obligations, contact the ATO, engage with the ATO. It might be a payment arrangement. It might be an extension of time to lodge. It might be suspension of lodgement enforcement action or suspension or deferral to pay a debt, but engage with the ATO. The last thing that you want is the ATO applying its more heavy-handed audit techniques and debt and lodgement collection techniques. There are also criminal penalties that can come with some of that, depending on where your client sits from the ATO's perspective. The last point on this one as well, which the ATO identified, and I'm not sure why this would occur, I must say, because I would hope that some of these things come out either in tax reconciliations or in reconciliations between your income tax return and your annual BAS, is simple reporting mismatches are wrong. There's mismatches between what's being reported on income tax returns, what's being reported on activity statements. By and large, they should correspond. Thanks again. Hopefully these five areas, five hot topics that I think will come up over 2024 will assist you with those solutions or ideas to work with your clients to get it right. These five hot areas will be important for advisors, for high net worth individuals and big family businesses for 2024. And if you need assistance, please don't be afraid to reach out. This is the sort of thing I do every day of the week. And I'm happy to run you or your clients through those areas in some more detail in order to provide solutions. What are the ways that we can mitigate those risks for the client and hopefully resolve them once and for all? Please keep in touch. If you have any questions, it'd be great to hear from you. Thanks so much and talk again soon.